Good morning. I normally blow the cobwebs out of my mailbox, but I got a bunch of notes and letters from folks in our church for my 72nd birthday.
Wow.
I'm really only 39, but you know, I don't count them the same way you do. But I want to thank you for that, those kind notes, that they were an encouragement to me. We're in Psalm 18. Psalm 18 is recorded in 2 Samuel 22. Word for word, same thing as Psalm 18. In 1 Samuel 31, Saul dies in a battle. David has finally reached the end of an onslaught by Saul against his life. On at least five occasions, you can find in the Old Testament where Saul tried to take David's life, and many commentators believe it that there were many more that may not have been recorded. Saul had a disdain, jealousy, hatred for David, and wanted him gone. And so he, on several occasions, tried to take his life. When Saul passed away, that attack was over. Now, 22 chapters later in the second book of Samuel, David writes kind of a remembrance of Saul's attack on himself. So in last week's sermon, we really saw the heart of David. If you were here, David expressed his love for God, and then he expressed his thanks to God, and then he expressed his awe of God. He used nine characteristics of omnipotence to describe God. Now, when we think about David, sometimes our minds go back to that young man, or that really a child, most believe 13, 14 years of age, as he was shepherding his father's sheep. That was when the prophet went to David's house, talked to his father, Jesse, and said, "God's chosen someone from your family." And of course, all of the sons walked by, and they were all rejected. He said, "Do you have any more?" He said, "Well, I've got a boy out in a shepherd's field." David came in and God said, "That's him." And when we think of David, we think about that. Or we think about David taking the refreshment and lunch to his brothers who were in battle. And then a few days later, he picked up five stones and killed Goliath. We think about his exploits as a great warrior, leader, as king. And so I think sometimes we build a viewpoint of men like David that is not reality. What I'm trying to say is this. David was not a superhuman. He wasn't somebody beyond us. He wasn't gifted in a special way so that he could do all these things, things that we could never accomplish. David was human, just like us, no different. Not only that, but David had a God. And sometimes, again, we put such an emphasis on what God did in the Old Testament that we think that that was a different God than we've got here. The fact of the matter is, it's the same God. Whatever God did in the Old Testament, he could do today. There's a verse in the Bible that says, Christ is speaking, he said, if you say to this mountain, be thou removed and cast into the sea. By faith, without doubting, it shall come to pass. Do you believe that? Well, do you really believe that? Or is that just a metaphor? Just something we make up? Or could God today do that? My answer to that is absolutely. He's the same God. And so when we read this drama that David is giving us, let's remember he's just like us. But he has a God just like ours. He's no different. And with that in mind, I want you to go to verses 4 and 5. Of Psalm 18, we pick up his story. David now is going to describe his situation. And it's some kind of situation. David praised God. He thanked God. He told us he loved God. He told us about God's omnipotence in those first three verses. It was like it was just God burst forth in David's life, and it was a bright light. And no sooner had he said that in verses 4 and 5, he comes down from that high, and the clouds come in on David. The brightness seems to be waning. And he remembers the seeming insurmountable difficulties that he faced from Saul. And he's going to tell us about that in these verses. Verse 4 and 5, please follow along as I read them. The sorrows of death compassed me. The floods of ungodly men made me afraid. The sorrows of hell compassed me. The snares of death prevented me. That's serious stuff. He's not making this up. He's trying in a few verses to describe for you what he was actually feeling as he went through those attacks. He's describing his condition from something we can get a hold of. He's describing his condition from an emotional and psychological viewpoint. These are words wrought with anxious care. There's a deep-hearted concern in his voice as he shares these things. These are literally words from a faint heart. Have you been there, friend? A faint heart. Have you opened your eyes and the day is no longer bright? It's overcast, it's gloomy. And you're feeling some of these very same feelings that David felt. And the first thing he said was, "The sorrows of death compassed me." What does that mean? Two things are important in that phrase, the word sorrows and the word compass. The word sorrows is a Hebrew word that's taken from the thought of a rope or noose around your neck. People that were captured or taken as prisoners, sometimes they'd put a rope around their neck and tie them up so that they couldn't get away. One time they were free, now they're incarcerated, and there was great sorrow. That's the picture. A noose that is so tight, you cannot possibly get away. It's as though death was tied around your neck. And you couldn't get it loose. Every time you turned, that noose seemed to get tighter. Sorrow got heavier. It was the sorrow of death that was dragging on you. Every time he saw Saul, perhaps this ran through his mind, because he knew it could be tonight, it could be this afternoon, and I'm done. So David's condition is described as the sorrows of death. But he said, these sorrows of death compassed me. The word compassed is the word like our word hemmed in. Have you ever been in a crowd, a big crowd, lots of people, and you were wanting to get to the front of the crowd? How many know what I'm talking about? And you're not moving very fast. You're shoulder to shoulder. You're hemmed in. How many ever been in that condition? And you're wanting, get me out of here. I went to a NBA playoff game years ago. And when the game was over, they let everybody out. You know, you come out into the corridor. I got it in the corridor and I said, I'll never get home. It was wall to wall people. I was hemmed in, unable to move. That's the picture here. So overtaken by the circumstance that you feel as though you can't get even a breath. Do you understand what David's saying? The sorrows of death, that noose got tighter and tighter. The crowd got greater and greater. The passage was impossible. I could not move. I could not even gain a breath. His condition. The sorrows of death compassed me. The second part of his condition, he's describing it. The floods of ungodly men made me afraid. The word floods is a word that we know. It's a rushing river overflowing. We've been down by the James after torrential rains. And what normally is a calm river and not very deep, at flood tide, raises 11 feet or more. And there are trees that are 18 to 20 or 30 inches through that have been ripped from the bank and now are being taken down that river in a torrent. And I thought to myself one time, my wife and I were sitting there, I wouldn't want to fall in that. You'd be gone instantaneously. Raging through an area. A frightening thing. Houses have been torn right from their foundation in floods. Cars have been ripped from the road in floods. Multitudes upon hundreds of thousands of people in our world's history have died in floods. So he picks this word and says this raging flood stage of water is what it felt like. From the treatment I was getting from ungodly men. The word ungodly is the word that means destructive or wicked. In fact, it comes from the thought of those who were sons of Belial, Satan. Ungodly men. Who have nothing but your ruin in mind. They want you gone. And they're going to do whatever they can to make it happen. So much so that it'll feel as though you've just fallen in to a raging river and you're about to go down. While they're standing on the shoreline, applauding the fact that you're there. Ungodly men. Satan has your ruin in mind. We're not playing games when we talk about Satan. There's nobody more ungodly than Satan. And he has your ruin in mind. Verse 5, he says this when he describes his situation. He said earlier, the sorrows of death compass me. Now he changes it. And he says, the sorrows of hell compassed me. The word hell here is the Old Testament word Sheol. It doesn't carry the same meaning as the word hell in the New Testament. The New Testament hell means a place of sorrow, heartache, eternal suffering. In the Old Testament, this word hell, Sheol, meant only the place of departed spirits. Both saved and unsaved went to Sheol. The New Testament word that is closest to it is the word paradise. You remember in Luke's, his description of the rich man and Lazarus. It says, and in hell the rich man lifted up his eyes in torment and saw Lazarus afar off in Abraham's bosom. That place was called paradise. How do I know that? Jesus is hanging on the cross. One of those wicked men said to him, Lord, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. He said, no, today. You don't have to wait for the second coming. Today. Today thou shalt be with me in paradise. And so the Old Testament was a picture of departed spirits, people who went to Sheol. Again, this sorrows, remember, means a rope around your neck. But now it has a picture of being pulled down. So he felt as though he was literally being pulled, forced from life to Sheol. And that he couldn't be stopped. He felt completely helpless. He was in great despondency, overcome with the fear of being taken out. Can we experience that? Let me read you 1 Corinthians 1:8. Paul said these words about himself. For we would not have you to be ignorant of our trouble. That word trouble means attacks, persecutions, trials. We would not have you to be ignorant of our trouble which came upon us in Asia, that we were pressed beyond measure. We were pressed above strength, so much so that we despaired even of death. And the word despaired here, feared. The pressure was so great on the Apostle Paul that he thought only of death. And he couldn't escape it. When depression overcomes you, death or the thought of death overtakes you. Let me say that again. And don't miss that. When depression comes on you, the thoughts of death will overtake you. People do not just go and kill themselves. they get in a state of depression. And their view is so askewed that to take their life seems better than to be alive. They even reason that to take their life, it would be better for everyone else. How do you know that? I've been there. I felt what Paul felt. I felt what David felt. And it's an overwhelming terror that you face. The sorrows of hell compass me. Then he said, the snares of death prevented me. The word prevented doesn't mean what we think it means. Doesn't mean to stop or slow down or block. The word prevented here means to go before or in front of. So he says, the snares of death were in front of me. The word snares is traps. Things we use to catch wild animals. I watch a show on one of those, like PBS channels, it's not. Life Below Zero. You ever watch that? It's about people that live in Alaska and have to go outside when it's 60 below. And they say, this is the only way to live. I'm going. Who? Where do these people come from? They're out there, yay, it's wonderful. You know, and I'm going, you're crazy. We're going to go hunting for a brown bear today. I don't think so. They eat you. You're part of the food chain, but they trap. They set traps and catch martens and other little furry creatures and then sell the fur. So they trap, they set these traps all over. That's what this word means, snares, traps. And he said they prevented me or were before me or went before me or were in front of me. So the thought is, these snares were set in the way he was going. He didn't know where they were set. So he had to be careful with every step he took, every stride he made, every turn he went. He could step on a snare. And so he was constantly walking with fearful care, fearing he might be caught in another trap. And Saul sent many. So David takes time in verses 4 and 5 to describe his condition. What do you do when you face that? I'll figure it out. I don't think so. Tomorrow will be better for me. May not. Just be happy. Verse 6 tells us what he did. Verse 6 says, in my distress, he just explained to us his distress. In my distress, I called upon the Lord, all God's people said. He pleads his cause. He states his petition in verse 6. God is a prayer-hearing, prayer-answering God. He's the one that says, come unto me. He's the one that says, call upon me, and I will answer thee and show thee great and mighty things which thou knowest not. I called, he said. This should be the automatic response to a fearful and terrible condition. In fact, it should be the automatic response to any condition. I call upon the Lord. Any need, any hurt, you may have reached the end of your ability to stand. You're crushed, fall on your face and call upon God. In fact, the word called means to call out his name. You like that? I like that. When it says I called upon God, he was calling out God's name. Maybe names. God's names carry so much of what God is, who God is, what he can do. Perhaps he cried out, Jehovah Jireh, the Lord will provide. Jehovah Shalom, the God of my peace. Jehovah Tsidkenu, the God who fights my battle. What name did he choose? There are many. Verse 6 tells us, in my distress I called upon the Lord and cried unto my, here's the word, God. That's the word Elohim. It's the word that describes God in all of his omnipotence, all of his power, all of his might is found in this word Elohim. That is the God he cried to. His Lord was Elohim. And he cried out to him. In my distress, I called on the Lord. I cried out. And that word means to shout. You ever been in trouble? Did you pitch a pity party? Or did you cry out? I hope you cried out. Help me! God of all power, Elohim, help me. He cried out to omnipotence. Those aren't just big words that describe God. These old big words describe God in his treatment of his creature. Omnipotence stands by you. Omnipotence holds you. Omnipotence carries you. Omnipotence hears you. Listen to what he says. In my distress, I cried out unto my God. He heard my voice, all God's people said. Now, when you think about that phrase, he heard my voice, he's not just saying he heard me. But when he says, uses the word voice, he's talking about your voice. The inflection, the tenor, the sound, the depth. That's what's meant here when he says, he heard my voice. He heard my voice. With a million other voices around him, he heard mine. He did not hear the others, but he heard David's specific tenor voice, what he was saying, how it sounded, what he would react to. Unbelievable. In fact, it says, he heard my voice out of his temple. Where was God? In his temple. How did he hear David out of his temple? When God's in his temple, if a king's in his temple, in his special courtroom area, and it's shut up, you could stand outside the temple and shout until you turn blue in the face, and he wouldn't hear a word you say. God was in his temple. David was outside the temple. David cries out to God, and God heard him instantly. Why? Because God is omniscient. And he finally says, my cry came before him, even to his ears. I love this phrase. This is just dynamite stuff. It was when David cried out outside the temple, it was carried immediately to the ear of God. Listen, every single groan, every single word, every single plea, every sigh, every tear, every whimper. God didn't miss one ounce of it. He heard it all in its complete and earnest cry. That is overwhelming to me. His ears. Do you realize that God doesn't just hear you? He does hear you, but God doesn't just hear you. He listens. Husbands and wives don't always communicate very well. How many know that? I'm a perfect example of understanding that. Often, my wife will say something to me, and before I just answer, just shout, say something out, you know. I've learned that don't say anything yet. Just don't do it. And so she'll say something, and my response is, my head is, did you say this? And is this what you meant? Or did you say this, and this is what you meant? And it's almost like throwing dice because you're hoping. I hope I pick the right one. Because when you pick the wrong one, it's just not good. You get a response like, you never listen. God always listens. You, whatever you say to him, it may be troubled. Have you ever just been so stirred you didn't know quite how to put it, how to talk to God? He already knows. He hears your heart. David, a man not unlike us, had a God just like us. And we have that same exact relationship with Elohim. He hears us and he listens. So I don't care how bad it is, what you're going through, God listens. Take it to God. David did. All God's people said. Lord, help us to love the word. Lord, this is such a powerful, impacting passage. The whole world, all of the word is. But Lord, in a very real way, David speaks to things that we understand, to feelings we've had or have, to emotions that we felt. Lord, help us to look to you like David did, to the great God, Elohim. Jesus' name we ask it, amen.